Current events.
Cutting edge.
Faith.
It's awesome.
Encouragement on the go.
It's the SOS Radio Podcast.
Talking about teaching our kids how to own a Christian worldview on SOS Radio with John Stone Street. And he's featured every day here on SOS with The Point. And John's the president of the Chuck Colson Center for Christian Worldview. And John and his team work to provide a Christian perspective on a lot of today's news and trends and just challenge us to think. John's joining us today on SOS. How are you?
Doing well, Scott. Great to talk to you. Thanks for having me on.
So this week with the State of the Union, President Trump said, hey, let's work together to build a culture that cherishes innocent life and let us reaffirm the fundamental truth that all children, born and unborn, are made in the image of God. I mean, that's an ideal we're going to be celebrating with the Women's Resource Medical Center Shareholders and Life Banquet coming up on the 29th.
Well, it is. I think the biggest myth of, I think, of our lifetime has been the Supreme Court settled the issue of abortion with Roe v. Wade. I mean, we had a president offer a very clear, unequivocal reaction to state-level laws that have been either passed or promoted in recent weeks that not only promoted abortion, but late-term abortion, and at least in the case of Governor Northam in Virginia, even seemed to be what I think Ben Sasse called fourth trimester abortion after birth. I mean, listen, this is as controversial of an issue as we have in our culture, and yet it's as clear as day, which is every single human being, according to the UN Declaration of Human Rights, according to our own Constitution, deserves protection. And so with what we're talking about, with freeborn children are indeed human beings, which every embryology textbook says it is, then this shouldn't be hard. So it's a clear cause of justice for every American, especially every Christian.
So, John, why do you think this issue is so polarizing, even in our church? Don't we all read the same Bible?
You know, do all churches read the Bible? That would be great. I think we should. I don't think the Bible's not clear on this at all. I mean, I think it has to do with our cultural's captivity to the sexual revolution. And honestly, I think with ultrasound technology that has allowed us to look inside the womb, with examples of abuse that we've seen around the country with Kermit Gosnell and others, this isn't hard. So one wonders. I mean, even we're polling more and more pro-life. 70% of Americans want at least restrictions on abortion not later than the first trimester. So even these bills that are being passed in New York and promoted in Virginia and now in Rhode Island and other places are not in step with the majority of Americans. Where does all this land? Well, I think we've got an addiction to the sexual revolution and this myth of sexual freedom. And if babies get in the way, they become disposable. And that's a grave injustice, just like any other cultural, historical moment in which some people were the victims of other people and were deemed to be inconvenient or deemed to be, you know, less than or, you know, in another category of a human being. Whenever that's happened throughout history, we've seen a lot of death and destruction, and that's the abortion movement.
We're talking about supporting and speaking life on SOS Radio today with John Stone Street and a lot of the commentators on the news. They try to make the whole idea, sanctity of human life, into a divisive issue, but really, this is a biblical issue. Supporting pro-life ministries are saving babies and they're helping women heal after abortions. There's grief that comes with this that no one talks about. There's unplanned pregnancies and women who are really struggling and don't know Jesus yet. And this is an opportunity for our church to really speak life into struggling women and support them right here in our community.
Oh, it really is. I'm so glad you said that. Too many people, I think, have chalked this up to the fact that it's a political issue instead of a moral issue. All political issues, by the way, are moral. Not all of them are worth, you know, sticking our neck out for or dying over, but this is really one. We often say around the Colson Center that ideas have consequences and bad ideas have victims. And we know what the victims of abortion have been, certainly the unborn children, certainly women who were misled and thinking, ah, it's just a clump of cells, it's not a big deal, and find out later that it really is. Certainly dads who maybe did or did not have a say in the losing a child that God had given them. You know, there's a lot of victims. And that's why, by the way, whenever a pregnancy care center, like the Women's Resource Medical Centers of Southern Nevada, asked me to come and support what they do, it's not a difficult decision. These are the heroes. Historically, Scott, Christians have always been at their best when they run into the brokenness and they care for the victims. There's not a clearer example right now of a group of individuals that are caring for the victims of really bad ideas in our culture than the women and the men who serve at the Women's Resource Medical Centers of Southern Nevada and places like it. I mean, listen, we're talking about helping women who find themselves in a pregnancy that was unexpected. This was the whole argument for abortion in the beginning of Roe v. Wade is, well, who's going to take care of these women? Who's going to take care of these children? And what's happened in the years since Roe v. Wade is, in every town in America, mostly women, mostly Christian women, have stood up and said, we'll take care of these women. We'll take care of these children. And they've been doing it for decades now. And not only that, but people who then have experienced the guilt and the shame that comes from an abortion, who's going to care for them? Who's going to let them find the healing and forgiveness that they need to find? Well, that's what groups like the Women's Resource Medical Centers are doing. So that's why I'm coming to speak at their banquet. That's why I'm asking the community and churches to support them, because they're doing heroic work on a day in and a day out basis. And they're joining some of the great Christian activists and Christian caregivers in history that literally changed the world because they were willing to get their hands dirty and some of the broken issues of the day. There's not a better example of it in our cultural moment than groups like this.
It's fascinating when we hear all these stories in the news and they break our heart about different laws that are being passed, and we just go, oh, I can't believe we even come to a place where a big part of the people in our country think this is not just an okay thing, but they think it's women's rights and it's liberation and it's progress. But well, there's victims in all this. There are moms that are victims of this that go through an abortion and later are having grief that they have to work through. They didn't realize it was there, and PTSD. There's all these little babies that could have been those next Supreme Court justices or those surgeons or those researchers that might find that cause for cancer and might have been able to find the cure for that. And all these little babies are created in God's image, and we want to support that. It's just so interesting because the Women's Resource Center is doing this banquet over at the Rio. It's a nice gala. It is a night where we get dressed up and we celebrate the ways that the women who are volunteering at this center, and the doctors and the nurses here in our city, and the physician's assistants who are actually doing a lot of these ultrasounds and doing the prenatal care for these women that found themselves in an unplanned pregnancy. These are women that don't know Jesus yet. And then these are other ones that have been through, and there's also a lot of women who have just been through really difficult situations in life and haven't fully fleshed this out yet. And we have Christians and we have churches that are speaking life into them and helping these women through the whole process.
Well, yeah, and that's why they're so heroic. And you know what? I think if you'd asked any of them, hey, do you realize that you're part of this thing that is literally changing the world and can change the culture? I mean, if you think about where the pro-life movement was 20 or 30 years ago versus where it is today, you know, it's far from over. There's a whole lot of work left to be done. But I tell you, it's in a much better shape. You could see a lot more light at the end of the tunnel than you used to be able to. And it's because of people not just talking, but people actually doing. This goes back in history to Christians who, because they were willing to live out their faith, because they were willing to actually stand in the gap for people and help them, literally transformed society. And right now, we're kind of living a culture of death. You know, I don't want to get too much into the biotechnology stuff, but we've got Chinese scientists editing human embryos, and American scientists doing the same thing. And the only reason that that's even thinkable is because we've got a couple decades under our belt of considering unborn children not human. And so this is culture-transforming work. It's life-transforming work, certainly, but it's also culture-transforming work.
We're talking about how Christians can shape culture on SWS Radio with John Stone Street from the Colson Center for Christian Worldview. John, you recently shared on Breakpoint a discussion about how ideas alone don't actually have the ability to change culture as we know it. If you pay attention to the news, it seems like ideas and opinions are really all they ever talk about. What does have the ability to change culture?
A classic example is this pro-life movement. Never just ideas alone. When we say ideas have consequences, it's absolutely true. But ideas make their way into culture with champions, people who embrace those ideas, who articulate those ideas, who repeat those ideas, who embody those ideas. So you think, for example, about Protestant Reformation. You know, there were ideas about theology, but they had to be actually embraced and courageously championed and even embodied in things like the printing press, which made all that sort of stuff possible. Talk about the sexual revolution. You know, there were some crazy ideas about sex that people came up with in ivory towers. But it was really when Hugh Hefner gave us Playboy magazine and Margaret Sanger gave us the pill and a way to disconnect sex from procreation. Now all of a sudden what you have is these ideas kind of getting legs and walking out into the world and really making a difference in people's lives. Same way here is what we're talking about in our Breakpoint commentary. Is that, for example, for the pro-life movement to advance, it's not just going to be people who say, I'm pro-life. It's going to be people who courageously embrace those ideas, who articulate and repeat those ideas, and then who can also embody those ideas. And what better example is it than this gala, the women and men that we're going to celebrate? It's also true when it comes to ideas about human dignity, or whether it's ideas about politics and economics or whatever. There's a difference between assenting to those ideas and embracing and championing them.
We're talking with John Stone Street on SWS Radio today, and he's going to be speaking at the Women's Resource Medical Center Shareholders and Life Banquet. It's coming up on Friday, March the 29th. And I love how King Solomon in the Old Testament of the Bible has this dream, and God gives him permission to ask for anything, and it'll be done. And Solomon chooses wisdom of all things. I mean, as we're thinking about all these social issues and all these challenges that our kids are coming to us with, the news is shouting on one side that we know don't really align with our faith, but we don't know what to do with them. Solomon said, "Give your servant a discerning heart to govern your people and distinguish what's right and wrong." I mean, he could ask for anything. He chose wisdom. How important is the hunger for wisdom for our kids today?
Well, we live in an age of information, right? I mean, the average kid will have to encounter more information on a daily basis than a kid from, you know, 400 or 500 years ago would have seen during their entire lives. And this information, whether it's coming in memes, social media posts, and school lessons and commercials and bumper stickers and whatever else, this information is hitting us from all angles. And it's not neutral. It's giving us ideas about life and the world and about human value and about the good life and about, you know, everything from where we came from to where we're going when we die and everything in between. And so the only way to navigate all of that information is to have what Paul prayed for the church at Philippi, not only that their love would abound more and more, and not only that it would abound more and more in truth, so we need love and we need truth, but he also said our love would abound more and more in truth and in all discernment. And so that discernment piece is something that I think we often miss. And that's why we talk about worldview on Breakpoint. That's why we do these daily commentaries. It's not just to say, hey, look, this is an event that happened. Isn't it outrageous? But to say, look, this is an event that happened. This is what it underscores about where we are as a culture and what we're thinking about in the world. And this is how you actually can understand it better. That's what we mean by worldview. That's what we mean by discernment. And I think ultimately that's what Proverbs means when it talks about wisdom. And when James says, pray for wisdom because God will give it to you, it's not only the ability to know what's true, it's the ability to know the difference between what's true and not true, and then become a sort of person who then is able to prefer the true and the good and advance the true and the good. And man, do we need some folks in our culture right now that can advance the true and the good? Of course we do. Absolutely.
So during Jesus' three-year ministry, he not only spoke truth to people that they needed to hear, but he also spoke truth and love. And we're talking to John Stone Street from the Colson Center for Christian Worldview on SWS Radio today. John, how do we go about making sure that we're speaking that truth? I mean, we're defending that truth, we're owning the truth, but we're doing it in a way that doesn't just push people away, but actually makes them think. I mean, how do we do that so we don't just feel like we're hitting them upside the head with the Bible, but we do it in love so they can hear our heart?
Yeah, well, that's it. I mean, love can't be an option. Love's got to be a partial of what we do. I think there's this rumor in our culture that you get one or the other, right? You either get truth or you get love, but you can't do both. If you tell the truth, that's not loving. And if you love people, you won't ever challenge what they're doing or what they're believing or what they're thinking. As Christians, we can't embrace that because what the Bible tells us is that both truth and love are a person in Jesus Christ. So if they're in conflict, they're in conflict in our mind. Jesus doesn't have truth and love and conflict in his own person. That's part of it. It's just kind of a theological confidence that truth and love are not mutually exclusive options. The other thing, though, is just having a good strategy of having conversations. I think one of the things that the age of social media and gotcha journalism has done is it's ruined our ability to actually have a conversation. So we look for that kind of gotcha moment that takes place, or, you know, we just yell at each other. One of the things that I talk about in my recent book, which is called A Practical Guide to Culture, is the strategy of doing what Jesus and Socrates did, just asking good questions. When Christians can become great question askers, how many times did people come to Jesus with a question and he responded with a question? And I think we can do the same thing. You know, I once had a conversation with a woman on an airplane. She asked what I did, and I said, well, I work for a Christian organization. And she said, I'm an atheist. Now, prove me wrong. I mean, she literally said that, and that was the beginning of a three-hour flight. It was amazing. But I had learned to ask questions. So instead of just kind of jumping in, here's what I believe, I said, well, what do you mean by God? And what she articulated was this kind of vindictive, angry version of a big bearded guy who struck people he was mad at with a lightning bolt. I mean, it's literally what she said. And I was like, well, I don't believe in Zeus. I don't want to defend him to you, you know? And it was a way to have this conversation about not only that God existed, but what do we mean by God? And how do we know who God is? And what are the attributes that God has? And that sort of ability is, I think, lost in our social media-driven context.
You know, it's funny because I think we start from this place a lot of times and the whole idea of truth versus love and grace. And it's like, well, the people I know need to own God's truth. Those are the people that I'm seeing in my circle of influence. And then other times our friends are going, well, you know, there's a lot of judgmental people in my life. So we need to lead with grace and give people a huge helping of grace and just let that linger for a while. And that's not the way that Jesus really taught. Like you said, truth and love are actually a person.
Yeah, that's right. And it's embodied, right? I mean, this is why I think so important for you and me who are going to be there at the gala with the Women's Resource Medical Centers. This is why it's so important for us to be there. So why it's so important for people to turn out is because they have developed the capacity there to not only tell the truth about the unborn children that they're dealing with and the moms, to tell the truth about right and wrong when it comes to sexuality, but also to live out and to really embody love. There's not an excuse for us. I know we say things like love the sinner, hate the sin, but oftentimes we never get around to actually showing the love that we have for the sinner. This is something that I think the sinners realize, that we're all sinners. We're all in need of love. And love that can't just be articulated. It's got to be actually embodied and shown. And they do such a great job. And I think that's why we see the pro-life movement where it is. One of the most promising places it's been in generations, just because there's so many people that are willing to get their hands dirty like that.
It's so interesting because the Women's Resource Center is not a judgmental place. I mean, most of the women that I've met that volunteer there or work there, many of them on staff, have actually been through abortion firsthand and have felt the grief of that or have found themselves in the place of an unplanned pregnancy earlier in their life before they accepted Jesus and realized, you know what, something's got to change here. And that actually was a catalyst of complete transformation and life change for them. I mean, the Women's Resource Center has some big vision they're actually going to be sharing at this banquet about covering complete prenatal care for women who need the help in our community, putting together a full adoption agency in-house that can help connect families who want to adopt or can help connect things in foster care. As we all know, that's a challenging system, to help these kids find homes and to help empower and enable these women and resource them to be actually be able to succeed in parenting and the financial part about it. Because that ultimately is the number one reason that people are going to a place like Planned Parenthood, is because they're thinking, I can't afford to have a child. What do I do?
Yeah, that's right. And this has been the beauty of it, is at centers like this have become so innovative. They've become so creative in terms of really reaching people where they're at, answering the challenges that they feel, the needs that they have. It's really amazing. And I think the innovation and the creativity, again, it just shows when Christians are at their best. They're able to come up with the real answers to the real problems that people have, and that's driving the kind of the demand, you could say, for abortion. There's so much bad information out there. You know, there's so many ways in which the law covers up really what abortion is. The law covers up the options that are out there. There's just so much bad information. And that's why it's so important that you and I and so many others get behind these organizations that are doing such great work.
Well, we're talking to John Stone Street from the Colson Center for Christian Worldview on SOS Radio, and he's going to be our speaker this year at the annual Shareholders in Life Banquet for the Women's Resource Medical Centers of Southern Nevada. It's coming up on March the 29th. It's a Friday night. It's going to be at the Rio. I'll actually be the MC at the event. It's going to be a lot of fun, John. I look forward to meeting you in person finally.
Absolutely, Scott. Thanks so much for having me on, and thanks for supporting this group. And I look forward to seeing everybody here in a few weeks.
You're clear to go.
Thanks for downloading the SOS Radio podcast. If you enjoy the discussion, give it a 5-star rating in your app store.
The way the technology works, your ratings really help spread the word.